State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yep, yep, Ghetto Boys is back and reloaded. All in your mouth, yeah, now deep-throated. This is for the streets, the real, the railroaded. The disenfranchised, the truth, the scapegoated.
And they know it, we speak the truth, so they quote it. Cause we wrote it, the north, south, the east coast. It's the GB knocking, we keeping your head bobbing. It ain't no stopping.
And once the beat drops in, violence, the system is so corrupt. They throw the rock out their hands and then blame it on us. It's GB. Don't get it twisted. On code and we ain't dancing for no buttermilk biscuits.
It's Willie D, y'all. Scarface is in the building. Collectively, we are the Ghetto Boys.
Reloaded.
Reloaded with another episode of information and instructions to help you navigate through this wild, crazy, beautiful world. In the studio, Jamie Bird. Also, moral support, Officer James Tenor.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely, man. It's a pleasure to have y'all on the show.
It's a pleasure being here.
Wow, you have been through a lot. You've been through a lot. It's been 24 years since your father was dragged to death by some white so-called supremacist.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't call them supremacists. I call them inferiorist, you know. But it's been 24 years.
Yeah.
How was your relationship with your father? And can you explain who he was as a person?
My relationship with my father was one of those where he always called me his baby girl, where I never grew up. I was 16 years old when he was taken away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And to him, I was like a six-year-old. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I wasn't a teenager. I'm a mother's, I'm a mama's girl. But me and my dad was really close. He was very talented. He could sing just about anything. A lot of people say he sound just like Al Green. He was very talented in music. He could play.
He was that good for real.
Oh, he was
sound like Al Green.
He could sound just like Al Green. Even if he don't know the words to the song, hey. You're going to be like, he know the words to the song because he could sound that well when he sings. So very witty. He was like the clown of the family. You know, it wasn't a party until James Byrd Jr. showed up.
Oh, so he's that guy.
He was the life of the party.
He was the life of the party.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge. So huge, just imagine, you know, our family reunions, the ones that we've had since he's been gone, has been very mute. Everybody just, mm-hmm. you know, it's boring, to say the least. It really is. It's because he will show up and he going to play basketball. He going to be out there with the kids. He's just going to be the clown.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's him.
Yeah. In the introduction, I introduced James as officer, but also, you know, you're an officer.
I am.
Yourself, and were you talking, how long have you been on the force?
11 years.
11 years mm-hmm. on the force. And it just, in my mind, I'm thinking she had to become a cop because she wanted justice.
Absolutely.
Is that why you pursued career in law enforcement?
Prior to this career, I was a probation officer with Harris County Adult Probation for 2.5 years. And then I went into education because as a child, you know, growing up in Lufkin, Texas.
Lufkin?
East Texas. That's where I grew up.
Do you know Wayne Rogers?
Mm-mm.
My cousin, and not a big dude. He ain't that kind of shit. I just
maybe mine, you know? Maybe my face.
Lufkin ain't a huge
place. It's not. It's really not. Yeah. You know, I've always been inspired by my teachers, particularly my first grade teacher and my eighth grade teacher. Mm-hmm. So that was something that I wanted to do is be in education. But while I was a first grade teacher for a number of years here in Houston, it was always my dad's story and, you know, this incident was always in my heart. Like, I need to do more for my community. And yes, I can teach all the little kids, each one teach one, but I wanted to make a different impact. I wanted to bring somewhat of closure and justice to families that, you know, I felt like, you know, was brought to my family. Even though I don't believe in the death penalty, I feel like that's the easy way out.
Mm.
In my opinion, I believe they all should have got life in prison with no possibility of parole, so they can sit in solidarity and see and drive themselves crazy. Hopefully, yeah. That was my thought. But I wanted to bring justice to families and some type of closure. And so that's why I joined the police department.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in joining the police department, before you joined, I mean, you didn't really just take this lying down. You know, you were angry. You because I read an interview that you did, and you told the interviewer that you wanted to drag them, you know,
the same way.
Truck the same way that they did your dad.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times, Black people don't sound like that. They be, before they even find out who did it, I forgive them.
I forgive
What's his
him.
Name? I don't know the name, but I forgive him.
I forgive
Just
him.
Give me a part. Yeah. And I don't forgive him. I don't forgive him.
You know what? And I can say, like, my family was that. My grandmother, bless her soul, she was one that wanted peace immediately. She mm-mm. wanted, she forgave my sister. Mm-mm. You know, she was 26 mm-mm. or so, I was 27 at the time, and she also forgave him. She and my sister and I appeared on a number of talk shows instantly. And I remember we went on the Mother Love show, Forgive and Forget. Y'all remember that? Mm-hmm. And I was like, what we here for? I don't forgive, and I surely won't ever forget, right?
Was Mother Love trying to force it on you?
No, she really wasn't. Okay. She and I really didn't even understand the whole point of that, you know, the name of her show, but that's really, and I was like, I don't forgive. And I had so much hate as a 16-year-old. I had so much hate in my heart, really, for many, many years, up until 2017.
You had a right to have that hate. They murdered your father. They murdered your hero.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had every right to feel the way you felt.
Can you rewind that and what was said? You know, what they said happened. Like, can you rewind that incident and go by, you know, step by step to what they said that these
How the
white inferiorist
did to your father?
Okay,
thanks, Willie, because I don't want to say nothing too mean,
and I don't call them their names at all.
Okay, well,
so
don't
just for the on June 7th, 1998, my dad was leaving one of his friends' wedding anniversary parties
on a walking.
Less than 2 miles from his destination. My daddy walked everywhere. Everybody knew James and left in Houston. I'm sorry. Everyone knew James and Jasper. Yeah. Sorry, I'm from three different towns. And so these three individuals drove up to him, picked him up.
We gotta pick a better word than individual.
Did he know them?
He didn't, not to my recollection.
Because they made it seem like in the media he knew one of them. Some type of relationship with one of them.
No. And I can tell you that my daddy didn't hang out with those types of guys.
Okay.
To be honest.
So.
But no. So he was walking home.
Where did they come from? Like, were they from Jasper or they were just passing through?
No, two of them were from Jasper. And one was from like one of the little towns outside of Jasper.
Hmm.
And they were all three just recently released from prison. So they were, prior to picking up my dad, they were in an apartment partying, celebrating, because this is an act that they was plotting and they had planned. And
they were released from prison?
And yeah.
They home scot-free.
Mm-hmm. Home scot-free.
How many years did they do?
In
prison.
Prior to June 7th? Or
yeah, prior. No. I'm just saying, for this incident, how many years did they do?
From
well, one of them was 1990, murdered in 2011.
One of them
got killed.
One of them was executed.
Good, real good.
And the other one has a life sentence.
So one of them. So I thought you said he was out of jail
with possibility of parole 2038.
You said one of them was out of jail?
No. They were out on parole.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, they were released. I'm dead. I got too mad too fast.
No, go ahead.
So one of them already dead.
Two
of them already dead.
Yeah,
did somebody get killed in prison?
2011. You would think, no.
Damn. Go ahead.
No.
So ain't nobody killed nobody. The state killed them. Damn.
Easy. That's why I said that's the easy way out. No.
Man, can you go see one of them get the fuck killed? I would love that. I would love to go with you.
To me, because they had no remorse. Not that I don't think it would have mattered, but they had no remorse.
Let me go.
And, you know, to sit there and see someone just sit in a chair and just be put to sleep. Like, I don't even want to look at the face.
I want to antagonize his ass. I want
to
go.
They don't care. It would have been more, you know, detrimental to me and my, you know.
I like to fucking throw shit at him, like human feces. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, Jamie, your father's walking down the street.
So, he's walking down the street, less than 2 miles
from his house.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they picked him up, put him on the back of a pickup truck. They took him to what is deep East Texas, which is called Huff Creek. Huff Creek is a small community, predominantly Black. Okay. So they already knew we're going to take him to the Black part of town. Took him to Huff Creek. A fight ensued. They, from what investigators say, my dad, you know, put up a good fight for a very long time.
Just to make sure we're clear. When they picked him up and they put him on the back of the truck, did he voluntarily get on the back of the truck? Like, this is for a ride?
He was forced on the back of the truck.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or in the truck.
Into the truck.
Yeah, the truck. And so they took him to Huff Creek. A fight ensued. One of them, who is the owner of the truck, who got life in prison with possibility of parole, it was his vehicle. He said that they didn't plan to kill an individual. They just wanted to scare a N-I-G-G-E-R.
You can say it.
So that's what happened. So it just kind of got out of hand from
and
what he said.
He said the N-word out there, out his mouth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So after the fight, they sprayed his face with black paint because he was still up. He was still trying to live. Then they was like, okay, he doing the most. So they took him, but you know, of course he's getting low in energy at this point because the owner of the truck who got life in prison ran because he said he got scared and he supposedly peed in his britches because he couldn't believe what was happening.
As Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Uncivilized mutt number three.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So that's when they had a chain in the back of the truck, tied him to the back of the truck, and they drove him for over 3 miles down Huff Creek. And let me include, Huff Creek is the community. It's like a fifth ward, if you just to give you a picture of it. That's where my mom is from Jasper as well. That's where she grew up in, Huff Creek. She went to church there, went to school there, lived there. My dad's body was dismembered and decapitated throughout the community of Huff Creek. the church where my mom's family went to church every Sunday growing up, his head was in front of that church. Part of his arms was in the gravesite where all of my mom's side family is buried. So how can we go back there? And every year in September, the first week in September, we have what is called church homecoming. How do you go back to where you grew up? How do you visit your grandmother and your grandfather and your aunts and all these people? How do you?
So Jamie, take us through the day, if you don't mind, when you found out. Like, what was your day like? And then take us to the point to where you got the news.
Okay.
Your dad.
So the day before, June 6th, my mom, my sister, and myself was in Jasper. We went to Jasper to my dad's niece, which is my first cousin, her bridal shower. So we were there, like a family reunion. We have a big family on the bird side. So my dad, he didn't come to the bridal shower. He showed up at my grandparents' home right after the bridal shower. And we were getting ready. My mom's sister and I were getting ready to head back to Lufkin. Again, that's where I lived with my mom. He got in a car. I'm in the backseat with my dad. He got in a car. And he wanted us to go to his apartment. He wasn't ready for us to leave. And he and my mom, although they were divorced, they had a good relationship, a very friendly relationship. So he was like, y'all come over, you know, see my new apartment, and I'm gonna cook y'all some steaks. And so I'm laughing because I'm like, dude, you don't even cook. Like, really? Like, you really trying? So he just kept trying to get us to stay. I had a party to go to. I'm 16. So I'm like, I'm trying to get to this house party. You need to get up out this car. So he and I kind of had some words. And my last words to my dad was, which I didn't know at the time, was, I hate you.
Oh, man. Fuck.
Mm-hmm. I hate you. Because, again, he telling me, oh, little girl, you don't run nothing. You know, all of this and that. And so we going back and forth. And I'm like, man, just get out the car. I got stuff to do. Mama, let's go. And he reached. My dad was tall, lanky, long fingers. He reached for the door handle and opened the door, got out the car. And as he was closing the door, he said, y'all be safe. We head back to Lufkin. The next morning, my mom cooking breakfast, my sister and I sitting at the table. We just talking about everything that happened the day before. You know, just not that incident, just the function. And we get a call. My sister answers the phone. And my aunt says, hey, y'all get down here. Get down here now. And my sister was like, why? What's going on? We thinking something happened to my grandparents. She said, James been, you know, killed. So all I could hear my sister say, daddy, oh no, daddy. And she drops the phone. So when she dropped the phone, I could still hear my aunt on the receiver saying, y'all hurry up, get down here. She's just screaming in the phone. We get to Jasper, which is normally like a hour drive from Lufkin, but it probably took us about 30 minutes this day. We get there, get to my grandparents' home. There was media galore, law enforcement everywhere. Not to go too much into that day of detail, but I was in denial. I walked in the house, I seen all these people, and I'm like, man, but ain't nobody did nothing to my daddy. Because everybody knew him. So I was like, what can happen in Jasper? What can he do? You know? So as days and days go by, my family is preparing for the homegoing services and everybody's crying. And my cousins kept coming up to me and they was like, Jamie, you don't want to know what happened to your daddy? I was like, ain't nothing happened to him because he coming back. Like, he going to show up at this house. And I go and sit on my grandparents' porch on their, they had a bench. And I'm looking out in the street and I saw my daddy. In my mind, it was him. He walking, you know, my daddy kept a cap on and he always wore button down shirts and they, you know, have it open and he just walking. And I runs to the end of the driveway and I'm like, daddy. And then he disappeared. That's when I knew. I said, yeah, something ain't right. that night, I was at my aunt's house, and we was getting ready. The next day was the funeral. And I asked my cousin, I said, so what happened? She was like, you really want to know? Like, you ready to know? I was like, yeah, because I wasn't going to go to the funeral or anything. Like, each day, I'm in denial. I'm just watching everybody shuffle around, and I'm the only one that's just, like, nonchalant. She told me what happened. She said, well, Uncle Bird was walking home. She called the guy's name, who house he was at, and three white supremacists picked him up and took him to Huff Creek, and they killed him. And I was like, they killed him? And she was like, yeah. And that's when she said details. And I went, because I don't show my emotions. So I went in the restroom, and I sat on the toilet, and I just cried. But at that moment, I didn't cry because of what happened to my dad. I didn't cry. I cried because of our last interaction. Those last three words that I said to him. And I was like, no, I can't. I got to some kind of way fix this. I got to apologize. I got to, like, the dragon didn't resonate in my spirit at that moment. It was, wait, I told this man just a week ago that I hate him. And this happened. And so for many, many, many years, that's the guilt that I held on to. I felt responsible. I felt that, I disrespected my dad for the very first time in my life. And I'm like, and this is what happened. So.
That I'm glad you answered that question, because I wanted to ask you that. Mm-hmm. Like, did you feel like your anger was a result of the guilt that you felt for speaking those words?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, a great deal. I couldn't, and even now, like, I watch what I say to people, how I say things to people, because of that last interaction. Because you never know. You never know if it's going to be our last conversation. And so no matter how mad I get or what I'm upset about in my, marriage, friendship, life, whatever, I always try to, if I hang up the phone and I be like, all right, what? I try to fix it.
So when you said, I hate you, that was a reactionary comment. You had a good relationship with your father?
I had a very good relationship. Yeah, we had a really good relationship. Like I said, he never allowed me to grow up in his mind. He always kept me as this little girl.
You were 16. You wasn't
But
grown.
Even then, like, I'm a whole teenager. I couldn't even wear shorts unless they was to my knees or past my knees. I couldn't have my arms out. Like,
what's wrong
that
with
was
wearing shorts past
no,
your knees?
No.
There ain't nothing wrong with that.
Mm-mm.
I mean, my daughter wore
shorts. It's hot in Texas. We need
my
some shorts.
My daughter's 27. She still have to wear shorts past
Bless
her knees.
Bless her heart. I understand, daughter. I understand. But so, yeah, we had a very good relationship. My sister, is 51. She spent the majority of her upbringing with my dad. So she was closer to my dad. She was the daddy's girl. I'm a mama's girl. And then I have a brother as well. Ross. Yeah.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Now, let's talk about Ross for a moment. Ross was, he was in support of this organization that was about reconciliation for murderers who are on death row. And he didn't want the guys to be murdered on death row. He wanted them just to have a life sentence. And so I heard you say that you felt the same way. You you wanted to see them, you know, go through a life sentence.
I mean, because I believe, you know, of course, not get out in the free. Absolutely not. But like a shot in the arm, what is that? I feel like you don't, not so much of them learning from the incident. I don't think animals as such will learn from this, because this is something that is, I feel like it's embedded in them. You know, it's a part of them. Even to their death sentence, they did not apologize. They had no remorse, you know, and they said ugly words to us on their last day. That basically he get what he deserve.
They said that?
One of them did, yeah.
Who, King?
Yeah, you know, he was a monster. Yeah. He was the ring, yeah, monster. Right.
Yeah. Uncivilized mutts.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you feel like, in your estimation, how much has changed since your father was murdered in terms of race relations and how our people, especially like living in Texas?
You know, I would love to say that it's changed tremendously, but honestly, I don't feel that. I feel like we'll take one step forward and 10 steps back.
That's America.
Pretty much.
That's the American way, bro.
That is. It's like, yeah. Yes, let's corral this family. Let's, you know, show them that we are in support of, you know, long as, we're, you know, we were speaking peace. But it's like, after everything is said and done, it's like back to normal.
Yeah.
And like you said, that's the family. American way. Yeah.
It's a whole other family American dealing way. With the same thing.
The same know, thing. And it may be in a different way.
I see it.
It may be with the badge on.
Did you see the officer in Mississippi that was just spewing out the N-word, like talking about how many people he killed?
Oh yeah.
Like that's who's in control of whether you die that night or go home. Those people, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. Slave patrol is what is
better but choice of words.
Slave patrol, mm-hmm. y'all.
We talked about it before.
Brandon. We have.
Race hate is a disease.
It is, and mm-hmm. it's a learned
behavior.
It's a taught behavior mm-hmm. by your parents, it's by your grandmother and grandfather and mom and dad and aunts and uncles.
Although one of them, it's so hard not to call them worse names than, you know, I just try to be civilized. But grandfather told us that he wasn't raised like that.
Yeah, right.
The one that has life in prison. He was not raised like that.
I don't believe.
Some of his best friends are black, right?
So, yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Cold blood. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
So, Jamie, you got a master's. You got a master's of what? You have a master's of what? You have a bachelor's from TSU, right?
Mm-hmm.
In administration of justice, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then at Prairie View, you went and got your MS
mm-hmm.
in marriage and family therapy.
Mm-hmm. What's MS?
Right? Mm-hmm. That's master's of science.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How much of pursuing those particular academics
mm-hmm.
Played into, you know, how what you went through with your father?
With the administration of justice, you know, that's because I was very instrumental in the passage of the state hate crime,
mm-hmm.
The James Bird Jr. Hate Crime Prevention Act in 2001. And so that was something that, you know, I was like, I'm going to be very instrumental in this aspect of the criminal justice system. With human science, it had, when I was trying to decide, do I want to go through counseling, you know, on the counseling side, or do I want to go through the marriage and family therapy side, I looked at it more like my family.
Okay.
You know, how, you know, my family dynamics. And everything that looked good ain't always good.
Ain't good for you.
It ain't good for you. And so with both of those, with both of those kind of ideas and experiences that I've gone through, I was like, okay, how can I connect the two? Because I had a great passion for, you know, just the family therapy part. And one, keeping families together and the dynamics. Family dynamics. And I speak about that in my book, Triumph Over Tragedy, about, you know, family dynamics and dysfunctionality especially in the black families. So that's kind of why I went that route. Yeah. Yeah.
How useful are those learnings and teachings when you're out on the beat?
You know what? Coming in at almost 30 years of age with HPD, I was like, gosh, I should do it this way when I was, you know, first graduated from college. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, my education and my learning through both of my degrees, it allowed me to really, like, meet these families where they are. Like, I understand when I go into Sterlingshire Apartments or Crofton Apartments or City-ass Apartments, I get it. I understand, even though some of the stuff I didn't experience growing up, you know, but going through those family therapy classes, I understand how to communicate with a lot of people. And I always meet them where I always say, you know, I'm going to meet you where you at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to use so much of the book teaching, but it allows me to see the scope of things. When going out into the community, because I tell people that all they, you know, ones that only know HPD, I just say, bless your heart, because I'm grateful for my experiences with my, you know, educational background and my previous careers. It has allowed me to see things at a young age that I probably would not have seen or experienced if I didn't go that route.
Yeah. I think that would be a good mandatory course for all officers to take.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you don't understand human nature. You don't understand how to communicate with human beings.
That's it.
And they give you a gun and a badge and the authority to affect people's lives. What do you think you're going to do with that? You know?
Mm-hmm. Like,
and James, Officer Snard, how long have you been an officer?
13 years.
13 years.
Yes, sir.
What's your education?
Administration of Justice from Texas Southern University.
Okay, TSU, check it
okay,
in.
Okay, TSU.
Okay. Ain't no other TSU, by
Third
the way.
Boy, Texas.
Ain't no other TSU. Where's the other one, but they perpetrating a fraud? But go ahead.
My minor was psychology.
Okay.
I worked in juvenile probation. I worked gangs, and then I came over to HPD. So that's pretty much my story. Born and raised here in Houston, Sunnyside, Texas, Sugar Valley, to be exact.
Sugar Valley.
On Dacre Street.
Right there, right in the neighborhood.
Right.
Yes,
right.
sir.
Right. So how did you guys meet?
So I got a little promotion and moved up to public affairs. And my cubicle was like right here. And James was right there. I had no idea that was James Byrd, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know until one day we just kind of started talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And when she told me that who her dad was, I went home and they had the Jasper, Texas.
Uh-huh.
I think it's on Prime or Netflix. Uh-huh. And I saw it, you know, I think Lou Gossett Jr. was in there. Man, I don't cry Willie D, but I did that night. That's just unfair. And I'm sorry that you lost your dad that way, Jamie.
Mm.
You know, I have five daughters
uh-huh.
and they need to, you need your daddy.
Uh-huh.
People talk about mothers, but you need your daddy too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I really feel for you.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why you're working. You should have been compensated. I just don't understand.
You guys didn't get, they didn't like issue a settlement?
No.
And why not?
Oh my God.
Did y'all pursue it?
My sister, I was at college, so she looked into it. There was a lot of, kind of say, and go back to the family dysfunctionality. so there was lots of things coming in for us.
Is it too late to pursue it?
It's never too late.
Well, Benjamin Crump is a personal friend of mine.
Mine too. I go get that. If they got,
Ben can get that money.
Hmm.
But if they ain't got no money,
No. Well, they got something. Somebody got something. Somebody got something. Whatever they got.
How about land.
That? Whatever they got.
Pickup truck.
Yeah. Something. Whatever they got.
Dog.
Give it up. Give it up. Unborn children. Give it up.
Horse.
Give it up. Give it up.
Something. Shotgun.
Whatever they got.
I want it all.
I want it all.
Yeah, whatever they got.
Brand new socks and drawers. Want it all.
Jamie, how do you feel about people's reverence toward your dad? Because, you know, everybody I've ever heard speak of James Byrd,
mm-hmm.
they understand the tragedy. They understand the impact his death had on
mm-hmm.
society.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody pretty much that I've spoken to have pretty much the same reaction, like we really, really, like, can relate to
yeah.
your story.
Yeah.
And we feel like your story is our story.
Because it really is. It really is. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, my dad had to be the victim that night. And like I say, you know, and what I'm about to say, I hadn't always felt this way. I had to do a whole lot of praying, a whole lot of soul searching, but it had to be somebody's daddy.
Hmm.
So I said, why not, you know, accept this and make the best of it and keep his name and his memory alive. And hopefully, you know, the things that, you know, my family and I, from my grandmother, aunts, and my sister and brother, the things that we've done, you know, hopefully these things just won't go in vain.
Yeah. Did you also say it has to be somebody else's daughter? Did you ever think about that?
I never think about that. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Nope. Mm.
It's remarkable how you are navigating through this. you know, like your story, like you got a story, mm-hmm. like all on your own, now, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. know, and it just seems like, it's like you said, like if, you know, that didn't happen to your dad, mm-hmm. perhaps your life wouldn't be what it is. Like you wouldn't have like the drive that you have, the tenacity.
Maybe not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think about that night, they had planned. This was all a planned act. And they said that they were going to kill somebody. It was, yeah, okay. Random. It was going to be somebody.
It was going to be some.
Somebody.
Negro. Some black person. Or Jew.
Is that what they said?
Or Jew. Mm-hmm.
Now, how the hell was they going to know if somebody was Jewish or not? You're just going to sit around and ask. Which religion?
It was, yeah. So it was all, you know, planned. And so I'm just like, you know, it was going to be somebody.
Yeah. Damn. Did you attend the trial?
I did. I attended the one in Bryan, College Station. Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't stay in there like? But a second.
Yeah.
Because, of course, any outcry, you know, we could have just thrown the case out. So,
did you feel you was going to get justice?
I did. And honestly, prior to that, I haven't, you know, I grew up in Lufkin, but I never really experienced any racial division or, I mean, I knew of it. You know, you watch movies and you hear stories of my mom telling me things that happened in her upbringing in the 50s. Never in a million years would I have thought to me that it happened. And then to me at that, to my family. And so I was already checked out. My brother and I both, you know, my sister kept hope alive. She just the sweetest thing. She just always on a positive note. And man, my brother was like, what are we here for? And I remember when they were bringing out, especially the chain, when they brought out the chain, and I grabbed my mouth because I already knew that, you know, because you could see the rust and everything. And it just, I couldn't imagine my daddy being tied to that exact chain. My brother got me up and carried me out.
Did they bring out any other items?
They brought out his shoes, his hat. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, the tool, the screwdriver that was found on the scene with the name.
Yeah. Yeah. So when at any point did you guys fear for your life while you were out there?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Was there anything that happened that was unusual, that spooked you a little bit?
No, we had. I mean, you know, the new Black Panthers was out there. I mean, so we didn't really, it was more so, I guess, traveling there. Not so much there on the, you know, on the premises of the courthouse, but traveling there, it was, you know, it was like, okay, we get pulled over. You know, what they gonna do? Because they already mad. Mm. That they were captured local.
Damn.
Because if it wasn't for the FBI, and I spoke yesterday at an FBI conference about hate crime and extremism, and I thank the FBI, Houston field office, because if it was not for FBI coming in to Jasper, Texas, I truly, truly believe that it would have been a cold case.
Wow.
Are there any names associated with the FBI that was involved in the case that you can remember, that you can speak on?
Not necessarily. Mm-mm.
But I do want to commend all involved in making sure that those uncivilized mutts were brought to justice.
Absolutely. Yep.
Everybody in law enforcement, you guys did your job on that one. I mean, you...
Yes. They did.
From the judge to the juries to the, you know, to the, the prosecutors, you know, to the communities, you know, everybody just kind of bonded, you know, and, you know, even the media did their job.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody did
their job. It was shocking. It was an international.
That's how it's supposed to go all the time. That's the way it's supposed to go when these uncivilized mutts prove that they can not be among the civilized. That's the way they need to be put down. They need to be pursued. They need to be put down. They need to be taken out of
society,
population, you know? That's the way it goes. Now, when you got the verdict, where were you? Were you in the courtroom?
The first one or the which one?
Okay, so the first one came mm-hmm. in, when you heard about mm-hmm. the verdict, where were you?
At home.
You were at home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the at this point, one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have that's, hope. And now that's hope. Right.
We have hope, yeah.
And then the second one comes in. Mm-hmm. Bam. We got another uncivilized mutt.
Right.
And then the third one. Boom.
It was like it was almost like, okay, do I be happy that he got life in prison? But it's like, why do he have to have possibility with parole? Why?
That part should have never happened.
It should not have ever happened.
They could have gotten through that without him.
Because he
without
talked.
Giving him, yeah, because
he talked.
He was going to talk just to spare his life.
That's it. Yeah.
The mutt did not want to die. They cool killing, but they can't take it the other way, you know? So he would have accepted a life sentence without parole had they said, this is what it's going to be. You're going to talk.
He wouldn't have had a choice.
Or we're going to kill you too.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. what would have happened. So. I guess they, you know, dropped the ball on that one. But, you know, I think it's going to be a big fight to keep him locked up when he comes up for parole.
You know, and I, you know, even though 2038 seems a long way from now, I keep up with all the appeals and, you know, all the letters that he write the parole board. And he's steady trying to this day. I get them all.
Mm-hmm.
He is steady. And, you know, honestly, I try to just stay. I try to think positive. But in today's world, especially political, like anything can happen because the main people that's making these decisions look just like them and mm-hmm. feel just like them. And they have the white cape on just like they do. Just not in front of the cameras.
Now, how do you as a police officer avoid implicit bias when you encounter a white suspect that, you know, considering what mm-hmm. you went through,
you know what,
with your dad?
That's really easy. And, you know, and I think the department was a little leery of that too, thinking, you know, especially when I applied, they was like, okay, how is she gonna, I wasn't raised to hate or to dislike any race. Mm-hmm. You know, I was not. The entire race did not kill my dad. So that was easy.
Okay. Did y'all hear that? The entire race mm-hmm. did not kill her dad. So that means that you're holding the person who's responsible for killing your dad, the people who's responsible That's for it. Killing your dad, accountable.
That's it. Mm.
They're being held accountable.
Not their families.
Everybody else.
Not them.
Each of them. Mm-hmm. Are standing on their own merit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got you. Okay, that's how I go. Okay, go ahead. That's interesting because, you know, it's like when one black person does something, people love to
put us all
everybody
in
and say, that's he's representative of everybody. And
that's it.
We're gonna, those animals, those
that
thugs.
Person and did
those
one thugs. Thing, we're going to go out and we're going to make it, we're going to make life hard on all of y'all. Mm-hmm. Since he did something. But as soon as one of them do something, it was a lone wolf. Oh, it was an isolated incident.
This is crazy, it is amazing, man. It's working according to the plan. It's by design. It's not by accident, by no
right.
means.
Right, right.
It's by design. This is all of this is by design. Mm-hmm. You got a black kid getting in trouble, he's a thug. You know, got a white kid getting in trouble, he's having some mental issues.
Yeah.
You know, a Middle Eastern getting in trouble, he's a
terrorist.
He's a terrorist. And Kim Jong-un, he getting in trouble. He's a, what did Trump call Kim Jong-un? He called him,
Kim Jong-un.
What did he call him, man? Damn it. What did he call him? Call him Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Willie, you are funny as hell.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
Mm-hmm.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How do we bridge the gap between law enforcement and the Black community specifically?
The Black community. I say, because I've worked 7 years in Fifth Ward, and I chose that community because, one, I have family from Cindy Woods, City Gas, you know, all up and down Homestead. I can relate. I didn't grow up in a, you know, in a predominantly Black neighborhood in Lufkin, but I understand the culture. And it's, to me, when I drive up to these apartments or, you know, anybody's home, I just be me. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the best way you can be. Just be you, because we can see, we know when somebody trying to play us. We know when you're trying to act like you something and that you're not. And I've always just been me. Whenever I pull up on any scene, I talk to people how I want to be treated. And I've had to, I mean, people old, my mother's age, I've had to counsel. And I've had to sit there and say, ma'am, you old enough to be my mom now. You know better than that. Mm-hmm. Just be real with them. Yeah. And to me, that's the easiest way. I sleep real good at night knowing that I kicked it with my family today.
And when you're from the area, Willa D, you learn to love your people too.
And you speak the same language.
You speak
man.
The same language.
If you don't come from that neighborhood and you're not a part of that those people, then I don't understand why you're there in the first place. Why are you here?
An officer won't use discretion if he's not from that area.
He don't. Yeah, we don't speak the same language. You don't understand me.
Well. Let's keep it a buck. Mm-hmm. White officers won't use discretion because black officers know how to do that when they work other neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. They know how to act professional. Mm-hmm. They know how to not bust somebody in the back of their head with a gun and talk crazy to people.
And throw their kids on the concrete and arrest
them.
Slam
their kids, body slam the children.
Lock them up on handcuffs.
All that stuff, beat up kids at schools. Mm-hmm. Black officers understand their duty. They understand what to do. Mm-hmm. They don't, that's why I see black officers working, predominantly white neighborhoods and non-black neighborhoods all the time, and they're not shooting, killing
without
people.
Incident. They're not killing
people, and the problem is that these officers are not being held accountable. Those black officers understand that if they do get a crazy idea to do something bad to somebody, to violate somebody, they're going to be held accountable. They know that. That's the difference,
and then I'll take it a little bit, the system is broken.
And I'll take a little bit further than that. White officers, in general, is one thing, but specifically, I'm talking about the ones who joined the force. The ones who joined the force to hurt, harm, maim, disrespect, violate. It's a lot of them. It's a whole lot of them. They're Klans members. They're members of the Proud Boys. They're neo-Nazis. And they're being hired because of their affiliation. Mm-hmm. Because you can't tell me they're not being hired because of their affiliation, because it's too pervasive.
Mm-hmm. Pervasive.
Way too pervasive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, policing, you know,
here's the thing, though, I do know, my thing is this, man, I do know white cops who are good dudes. I do know some good dudes. Mm-hmm. I do know them personally. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you that.
So do I.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you that it is a specific race of people who is killing everybody, violating and destroying people, and that is white cops.
And I believe
it is predominantly majority white cops who are murdering unarmed people and killing people and beating up people and planting drugs and dope on people. I'm not saying
black people.
You ain't got some black cops that do it too, because we got some dirty ones too.
But by far and large,
those white cops out there that have that type of mentality, they're outpacing everybody.
Mm-hmm. And for Houston particular, because I feel, you know, it starts with the leadership. Mm-hmm. Everything starts, you know, what your leadership is going to tolerate. And if you know that your chief or your assistant chief or any of your above superiors, is going to just pat you on the hand or, you know,
give you a promotion.
It's like, yeah, let's do whatever we want to do. But I can honestly say for our department, we are held accountable.
We sure are.
We are held. And I've been here through three different chiefs and they we don't tolerate it. But
are the white cops also being held accountable?
I have seen them being held accountable. Absolutely.
Some have been let go.
Yes. Without a doubt.
We do not tolerate HPD anymore.
Yeah, well, my thing is that, like, I do believe that law enforcement is necessary. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I want to make it clear that I am not against police officers. I'm against dirty police officers, bad, corrupt police officers.
Yeah,
they are uncivilized mutts, and like the rest of uncivilized mutts in society, they need to be put down, straight up.
The pink juice.
And I always say we on a recruiting band too. You know, it's diversity. You got to go to these. I go to, you know, Jack Yates and Wortham and all these schools. You got to go and recruit in your neighborhood to diversify the department. That's where the change is going to start.
How do you really? We hear people say that, we hear officers say that, but what can be done to actually have a solid, I guess, some type of solid movement to recruit, just like they recruit for the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marines, to get people to understand, black people to understand that we do have to become police officers. And as we become police officers, we move up in the ranks. And now we get police chiefs and we get commanders and we get sheriffs. And that's how we are able to police ourselves.
You partner with these local churches. Get with these, and that's what we do as our Afro-American Police Officers League, our Black APO. Union, APOL. We go to, we partner with these churches in the community, and we hold a Saturday forum, you know, our panel discussion. We answer these questions, and we let them know, like, hey, we all, y'all look like us. Tell me why you don't want to be a, what's stopping you from being a police officer? Oh, because my uncle say, oh, I better not come in this house being a popo. Okay, but why? Besides that, like, you have to go out to your, in your community. You need to make the change, because if we always, you know, and it, and I feel like in a Black community, we discourage our own kids from being a part, because, you know, again, because of what they see on television. But how are we gonna make the change if they not a part of it? If-
to give you an example, the cops in New York. The Irish cops that are in New York at one point, and the Irish and the Italians were treated like second class citizens in New York. They were getting beat up.
They became police officers.
Yeah, they were getting beat up. They were getting murdered. They were scum to society, to New York society. They became police officers, and now they run it. Unfortunately, they're doing to us what was done to them. And that's where oftentimes power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, so, but at the same time, it's very difficult to change anything unless you are in the game. Like, yes, it's very difficult to score if you're not shooting the ball.
I think, I think with police agencies, it starts at the interview process. When you're interviewing for police, for a position of police or cadet, it's up to the people who are interviewing these people to make sure and screen them that they're qualified to be.
I think their family should be screened also.
And they do. Yeah,
and they do.
They do. With HPD, we screen them. Well, not screen them, but, you know, of course, they have to put their family's information
down. I got a background check.
But they do background checks.
If he was a...
But you know, we do all of that.
Klansmen, I want
to
know.
We do the backgrounds, even with the, you know, this whole, you know, open carry, and you know, you got to go through all this stuff. It's like, you can do all the bad. You may not be this bad person on paper, but if your heart is evil, you may just got away with stuff. You must just you probably just didn't get caught.
Or you got caught. It's like, or you got caught and entered a diversion program, and got it wiped off your record, so nobody know. And you sitting, you a judge.
Does open carry
judge?
Does open, you know? Has open carry opened up? Is it more crime now with open carry, or is it the same, or is it less?
I believe it's more.
It is,
yeah, definitely.
That's crazy.
It seemed like to me it's always going to be just more crime, just because of the way America is designed. America is designed to be criminalized.
They dropping the guns and the drugs here. I mean.
That's what it is. Jumping out the car like with rifles.
How hard is it for you guys who want to be a good cop? How hard is it to work amongst your peers?
It's not hard. It's like this. You put yourself around officers that are like yourself. So you have different groups of officers. So if you have if you're even tempered, if you have a good spirit where you want to help people, there are officers that's just like you, and they got the other ones. So you just stay away from those. From those.
How frustrating though is it to be a police officer and have to deal with the public's frustration and the public's criticism of police officers who are bad?
Well, I'm gonna say this, and to answer your question with that, when George Floyd was killed, May 25th, and on June 7th, we all know what that day is. So, you know, Houston is you know, with the protests and everything that was going on. It was still going on June 7th. And we had to get called in to work. We was working around clock. And I was sitting at my cubicle. And no, you know, I'm very private with who I am in a, you know, at work. Everybody don't need to know. I don't walk around with a sign saying who I am or who my dad was for safety reasons. However, I'm having my moment on this day because I got this badge around my neck and this black man just got killed by some officers who are supposed to be serving and protecting the community. I had a very hard time going out in the community that day. I did. I sat at my desk and I just was like, what do I do? I looked at my badge and I was like, like, how do I continue to be a police officer when police officers are seemingly, they're killing a black man, which put my dad's face in a picture of, you know, the George Floyd. That's all I could see. It was a different crime, but it was the same crime in my eyes. Mm-hmm. That was very hard for me. And so, you know, out of all the things that has happened between, you know, the police and the community, I believe, you know, that incident took toll on me. And it was very hard to wear that badge. And I had to just get it together and remember my why and remember the reason why I started wearing a badge in the beginning.
Yeah. You have to remember that. You have to remember that why.
That's
because
it.
You're going to be challenged. Anybody mm-hmm. that's trying to do something great, if you're trying to do something that's against the odds, mm-hmm. you're trying to walk that path less traveled, mm-hmm. you're going against the grain, you're going to be challenged.
Mm-hmm. Every time.
You're going to be tested.
Yeah.
Every time.
And you have to have, you know, that thing about you, that thing in
that
you.
That drives you.
That makes you keep going.
That's it.
It's okay to pause because we're human. Mm-hmm. It's okay to pause and mm-hmm. reflect and even consider quitting, you know, mm-hmm. consider, you know. Mm-hmm. But you muster up the courage and you say, yeah, I'm going to do it anyway.
Because, you know, I thought about my black brother, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. my black two nephews, you know, mm-hmm. you think about that. And I'm sitting here like, like I'm about to go out here to this march and do I be on this side? Because I'm with my people, you know, I feel this. I feel they hurt, their pain. Or do I, you know, what do I do? And I went out at the time, you know, Chief Fenner was there and, you know, we went out together and he looked at me, I looked at him and he was like, you good? I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I can do this job and I can, you know, put my feelings aside, but I feel what they're feeling.
Shouts out to Chief Fenner.
Chief.
Yeah, good man.
We feel your pain.
Love you, Chief.
We feel mm-hmm. your pain. Yes, we identify. Man, we love your family.
Thank you.
Tell your sisters and brothers.
Me too.
That, you know,
tell yeah, them that we definitely appreciate you guys coming out and sharing some history, some knowledge, and dropping some wisdom on us, especially when it's coming, you know, to dealing with the neighborhoods, bridging that gap between the police and the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, recruiting yeah. more of us, recruiting more people that look like us to police us. Because that's like it. I say, if you don't share any interest in these people that you are policing, then why are you here?
That's it.
Anyway, yeah. we love y'all for coming out.
Police officers, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. We love y'all for coming out. We appreciate y'all. And if you have a nonprofit or a page set up that you want people to tap into, mm-hmm. you can go ahead and drop that information there, both of y'all.
Okay. Well, I do have my book, Triumph Over Tragedy. It is on Amazon. I'm in the process of getting my webpage developed at this moment.
Okay.
It's on Amazon. Jamie A.B. Queen is my Instagram name.
Jamie
A.B. Queen.
Okay.
J-A-M-I-E A.B. Queen.
Cool. You got something?
So I'm James Tenard. You can just look me up on YouTube.
I've done. Yeah, but I know you do a lot of stuff for the kids.
Right, but yeah, interviews. I've done an interview with you. So
yeah, we did an interview together.
They can just put in Tenard.
For sure.
Yeah.
HPD.
HPD Tenard, and they can see the interview that I've done.
Yeah, I saw that interview y'all did.
He didn't see that, man.
He did. He's on mental health. Oh, so how do I know?
Oh, mental health.
Because he just said something about it, man.
Did you mention mental health?
No, I did. I did.
Sit down, man.
He didn't mention mental health.
It ain't over yet. It ain't over. Sit down.
He say sit down.
Sit down.
I was going to tell you something real quick, if I could. Yes. This is what I mean by you need good officers, and we have a purpose. When I was a rookie, that was a sergeant who mm-hmm. asked for a police officer check by with a traffic book. Checked by the scene, African-American woman with her three children. She had three warrants. So officers can use discretion, and we can just write a ticket,
mm-hmm.
or we can write a warrant and say, hey, get it done. But he went to the next level. He said, look, ma'am, can you pay for the tickets? The tickets would probably be $1,100, $1,200. Of course, she couldn't pay for it in a raggedy, beat-up Honda Accord, paper tags. He knows that she didn't have the money. Ma'am, I'm going to have to go ahead and call CPS.
God damn.
Hold on. I said, Sarge, please. You know, I'm a rookie, so I'm putting myself out there. Mm-hmm. I said, Sarge, please don't. You know, well, what you want me to do? So he asked, is the grandmother available? The grandmother came. He ran her. She had warrants.
Oh.
So he was going to take both of them and have CPS come get the kids. But this is where we come in. I said, Sarge, tell those her babies. Please, please don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he went ahead and let it go. That's why we have to be on the force.
Why in the hell did he run the grandmother any damn way?
Why would he?
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't, that was a story idea. Was he black?
And as a rookie,
was he black?
I commend you.
No.
Because
no,
that could have been
done
his
with
career
it. I don't want to talk
by speaking
no
out.
Yeah.
You serious?
But this is because God put his people everywhere. Really mm-hmm. deep. Mm-hmm. So they have good people in policing. Everybody's not bad. They have some people who are going to help you all the way.
Yeah. Do whatever they can.
Yeah,
they
but
can
that
do
was you.
Yeah. Understand.
That
understand
was you. He didn't do nothing yeah special. You convinced but, him to but, let these
but,
people
but,
go.
But no, at the end of the day, man.
Had he not been there, what would have happened, Willie?
Right.
And I'm done.
You're right. But at the end of the day, the sergeant had seniority, and he mm-hmm. could have at any point said, mm-hmm. "I'm taking him anyway." Mm-hmm. So at least at that very moment, at mm-hmm. that little window of opportunity,
he had a self check moment.
He God put some on his heart, yeah, whatever little heart he had,
yeah,
and put some on his heart to mm-hmm. let those women go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess you get a speck of credit for that. but thank you, absolutely. Thank you for your service, man.
I appreciate it.
And thank you also, James.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
parents. Right.
Yeah.
No more right talk.
Yeah.
This episode was produced by A-King and brought to you by
the Black Effect Podcast Network
and iHeartRadio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.